The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we'll review Austin's loss on the road in Orlando. We will preview the season's first Copa Tejas matchup. We're going to be joined by former MLS coach Gio Savarese for that one. Very excited to learn that earlier today. We'll also discuss Efecito crashing out of the Open Cup and then cover all of the other Austin FC news. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as sometimes, by Mike Crignola. Mike, thanks so much for being here, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Landon. Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Crignola, and welcome to Moon Tower Soccer. Landon, I feel like we've gotten to see each other in person, like real life friends, a bunch lately, and it's made my heart really happy.
It's been great, hasn't it?
Yeah. Some of the circumstances weren't wonderful to hang out in person, right? That Efecito opening match loss, the U.S. Open Cup loss. But some of them have been really fun, just hanging out in the park and having a little kick around, like we're real life friends.
It's funny because I've probably seen you as many times now in real life as I have Jeremiah, like in the last several months. People, I think I've said this on the show before. People think that me and Jeremiah are together all the time. It's like, I literally see him like maybe once a month in person.
Yeah. I'm liking this though. I remember when I met you for the first time in real life at your birthday party. And I was like, man, I hope we become real life friends. And here we are. We did it.
I think I told you that, like you said, like, thanks for inviting me or something. And I was just like, you know, it's really hard to make friends whenever you get older. And so I just decided that like, there's a few people that I've like met very recently, don't know that well. And I'm just going to invite them to my birthday party because that worked when I was a little kid. So,
yeah. And it was a fun birthday. I'm very much always looking forward to the next one. I don't actually know when your birthday is, but I got the invite to a party from y'all. And I was like, it can't be this. It can't be so soon. And I knew it wasn't because it wasn't at the same pizza place.
Yeah, it was. We actually skipped my annual birthday party this year because of Ashley was out of town and then we had other stuff going on. And so I think I was like at home by myself on my birthday this year.
That's so sad. I'll buy you a slice.
Thanks, Michael. all right, let's jump into the biggest stories of the week this week. Let's start off with, talking about the game. Sebastian Driussi was one of the bigger stories this week. Josh Wolf gave us a heads up that he's almost certainly going to start in the Orlando match. I said in last week's show that the Austin FC that we saw in the last two games with Driussi added in would win some games. Not a lot of games, but I thought they could win some games.
Yeah, what that gave me a lot of hope because like this felt like one of those games. This felt like a could win game.
Yeah. What I failed to factor in is, I mean, A, that we would not actually give Driussi the ball that much, but then B, that when he did get the ball, that he, I've been playing with the soundboard and I worked in a sensor, like a beep button that I can do it in real time now. So wow. I didn't factor in that Sebastian Driussi would play like dog. I said a nasty curse word, Mike, and you can't prove otherwise. But I thought he was pretty poor. Like he wasn't very good.
And yeah, I was underwhelmed. But also like I didn't look at Driussi's first start coming back as like the biggest problem with this match. I think it was like it exacerbated what I thought the team's biggest issue was, which was stringing any number of passes through the midfield together. But I don't necessarily think it's fair to lay the blame on the one dude who, you know, is coming back from injury in his first start back.
Yeah, I'm absolutely not saying that how terrible the team looked is his fault, but I think a lot of us were kind of hoping that he could alleviate it at least a little bit. Yeah. And it didn't happen. Not entirely his fault. I feel like I've said this on the show several times that whenever things aren't going well, I feel like Driussi tends to drop a little deeper when maybe he doesn't need to. And he did that a few times and then immediately gave the ball away. And so, like, I understand that he feels like he needs to try to put his stamp on the game a little bit more when they're not getting him the ball and they were not getting him the ball. But whenever you do that, you should do something good with it. And he just rarely ever made that happen. And then I think the spot where he is strongest is like underneath that striker and getting chances in the box, arriving like a little bit late or sneaking into the backside and getting those half chances and finishing them. But when we're not getting the ball into the box, we're not even getting the ball into the final third until Orlando's up 2-0, right? Like they get those two goals. They sit deep and they're like, you can have the ball. We don't want it. I think the possession was ended up being in favor of like 57% in favor of Austin. But at halftime, it was closer to 50-50. And so when the game was still competitive, it was closer to 50-50. I think Austin had maybe a slight advantage, but once Orlando went up, they just sat back and said, yeah, have the ball. And I know that Austin has been playing a little bit different this year, but this was a hard return of the horseshoe of sadness there in the second half after that second goal.
Yeah. You know, we had some spells of possession in some very short spells of possession in the first half, but that second half stretch from like 65 to 78 or so, where we do nothing with it, was a pretty tough one. You know, we're sitting on now, thanks to a stoppage time header, you know, we're sitting at 8 shots on target in the entire year, despite having sustained amounts of, you know, possession in this match.
Yeah. And I don't know why this time, because we've seen that play out many times in the history of Austin FC, where a team sits deep and we can't break them down and get, I mean, what we got, how many shots total in this game? Like
three
shots total in the game. So if we're like, you're playing possession and not generating anything. And again, like this is not all system. There are many times the other night where I think Obrion specifically, where a lot, like one rotation that we're seeing is midfielders will pull wide. They'll set up that triangle. And then either the winger that floated in or that midfielder that floated in will make a run in behind. And there was two or three times where Obrion had space there. And these are balls that Orlando's playing 7 days a week. Like, they're playing that every time. Almost every team we play, they're playing that in behind. And our players are looking at it and saying, let's send it back to the other side very slowly and see what happens over there. And so I criticize the players for not taking more advantage of it. But I'll also criticize a coach for just keeping on trying to do that when he knows exactly what his players do when they're in that situation.
Yeah. I both am super sad about and infinitely frustrated about the 2024 Alex Ring not being informed that he is not the 2022 Alex Ring. Every time he tries these big, long switches of play and just doesn't have quite the same power on those passes as he used to. Like, somebody's got to pull a guy aside, right? And just, you know, like, let him know.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like that is part of the plan too. But as we saw a couple of weeks ago, Emiliano Rigoni received some of those long diagonals from the midfield or from center backs and would get 1v1 with someone and then not even try to take them on most of the time.
Yeah, I don't mind it as long as the ball makes it there. The passer is off the hook for me. It was the number of times that didn't happen.
Didn't even make it there.
Right.
I want to end on positives, but I feel like we're going there too early. What else can we talk about?
Yeah, I just, it almost seemed like after three or four matches where we had completely abandoned this style of play, ending up in this possession structure again, the team just was like, okay, but what do I do now?
Yeah.
And like, that's troubling from a like bigger game plan perspective, that like we have built this team and, you know, the sporting director and the coach and the academy are all aligned toward this possession style offense. And for whatever reason, we completely abandon it for a long stretches of time at the beginning of the season here. And then we find ourselves in it and can't make anything out of it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come back to Josh Wolf a few times throughout the rest of the show, including with Gio Savarese, who we get a little bit of his insight on the situation as well. So let's move on, but we'll return to the topic shortly. So to end on the positives, I'll say that Brendan Heinzeick was one of the few positives that I take away from this game. This is what it feels like to have more than one center back on your team. Like last year, it was disaster. Like a center back getting called up to the national team was disastrous for us.
Yeah.
We ended up with Alex Ring and Nick Lima playing center back more than once. That happened more than once last year. And to have Brendan Heinzeick step in and look entirely competent, he didn't look terrified when someone passed him the ball. He has object permanence, and when an attacker would move out of his line of sight, he acted as if he still knew that person was there. And these are things that we've not always been able to rely upon in our back line. And so that is one thing that made me quite happy.
And also you could tell that like he was comfortable with the role, right? Like, and I know that's table stakes for a player in a position, but we haven't had it before. And so you could tell that when Matt Hedges was going to pass him the ball, Brendan Heinzeick knew where to be for that pass. And he knew what Matt would expect from him in that position. And like being able to like adjust and go somewhere else, but then also come back to be a center back again, man. The fact that we are so excited about this, I think, speaks volumes.
There are several moments where, so in the buildup, Alex Ring would often either drop between the two center backs or pull wide, and they would kind of shift, and he would make a back three there. And in those moments, oftentimes, as space would open up, Heinzeick would either dribble into space as they allowed him to, or he would make a run and get on to the end of a ball to kind of break that first line of pressure. And so he's got like the wherewithal and the confidence on the ball to do those things. And then also the athleticism to get back and get into position whenever you need him to. So I've seen people calling for him to start over Cascante. I would like to see more of him before I say that that's what I think is the right call. But I'm extremely happy to have him here and extremely happy to know that like, maybe he could push for a starting spot, but if not, that if we lose someone else, we have a decent option there waiting.
What about Landon? If we go back to having no depth and play three at the back?
I mean, don't tempt me with a good time, Mike. Honestly, I wouldn't be mad at it.
Me neither. I would love to see it happen, right? Maybe, this is wish casting. Maybe we have a lead and we are defending that lead.
You're talking crazy, Mike.
And we move into a three at the back situation to be able to, control the ball a little bit more and provide some defensive stoutness. Brendan Hines-Ike seems like a perfect third in that back line there.
So we didn't plan on talking about this now, but it's very apropos at the moment. What if we went back three with Hedges, Cascante, Hines-Ike? We played up top. We were talking off air about how Driussi's not a real 10, but we're not getting the ball as a second striker. And that I think Diego Rubio is better at being a 10 than Driussi is. Like, as far as just vision, like playmaking, those little like lock picking passes, I think Rubio's better at him, better than him at those things. What if we did the formation that Colorado played the year that Rubio scored 22 goals or 17 goals, whatever it was, and played Rubio and Driussi under Zardes, and then played three center backs, have Gallagher and this is where we get a little sketchy. Hector Jimenez, I don't know, as wing backs, or I guess Biru if we're playing the other.
I was going to say, right now it's Biru, and it's Biru in a walk, like against.
I guess he's one of the most like technically gifted on the ball players we have, so maybe having him in the final third would be fine. but I mean, I'm not saying like that definitely solves all our problems, but whatever we're doing right now isn't working. So I wouldn't mind seeing that getting run out a game or two.
It'd at least be fun.
In theory, at least.
I mean, I'd have fun watching it happen regardless of the outcome. And I guess that's maybe where I'm different.
All right. I think we can call that good for this segment. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Moon Tower Soccer. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FEF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FEF is a different kind of a personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education. And they have their own podcast called Summary Judgment, an excellent name for a podcast. Check it out wherever you get yours.
You can go to FEF.law to find out what makes FEF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FEF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over five decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to six Austin FC game tickets per person per year. You'll pay none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more and to register for free parking at the Amplify Esperanza branch on game day, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower-soccer. All right, we are back. I almost called you Jeremiah. Mike, let's get into the rest of the game details. So let's start off with kind of the narrative or storylines happening before the game. We already talked about Driussi, you know, that he was going to start. We knew that Danny Pereira and Julio Cascante were going to be away for international duty. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Knowing that we were going to be that slim, we saw later in the week that Jimmy Farkerloon and Antonio Gomez both got called up on short-term loans. I think that's three for both of them, with four being the limit of the amount of times you can do those short-term loans. What are you, like, my take on this is that it doesn't matter. I've seen people frustrated that we're using all these short-term loan call-ups now. My take on it is, if by the end of this, like this transfer window when we could sign them, if it looks like they're good enough or like we need them enough, we'll just give them a contract, a supplemental roster contract, and then call it good. And if they're not, we won't. And then who cares if they have any more short-term loans available?
Yeah, I think the short-term loan structure is flawed and needs changing. Well, that, but ultimately, that I don't.
Without saying for almost every MLS rule.
Right. But ultimately, I do not think these specific short-term loan agreements are hurting the player's development necessarily, nor are they hurting the club's ability to compete. And so if those two things are true, then I'm not worried.
And what about, so I heard a few people also expressing some displeasure with not even filling out the whole bench. When you have guys like CJ Fodre and Micah Burton who are on first team contracts and can just play up whenever. In normal circumstances, I understand why you don't want to just throw younger players who haven't earned it onto the first team bench. I don't think we're necessarily in normal circumstances, and that at this point it's like, whatever, man. Just if they're there, put them on the bench and let them just do it.
I think there's massive value in at least having Micah on the bench for a game like this, where, you know, the second team is not playing this weekend, right? And so there's not a need for him in Austin or wherever they're playing. And like, he's a kid that we have a lot of hope for the future on. And so the more he's around the first team culture and the more he can see what could be if he continues to develop at the pace that we think he is and should be, the better that it is for his kind of future. You know, Micah is the big miss for me. I think CJ, if he's healthy and there's not anything else going on, he's another guy who should be on the bench. I think if you're sending a message or something by like playing him down or whatever, right?
And the CJ one feels a little more like that, right?
Then maybe you don't bring him, and by bringing Micah, it like really hits that message home of like, if you want to be in this conversation, this is the work that you need to put in or whatever, right? Like there's in the same way that we put Sebastian Driussi on the bench and we weren't going to play him. Like what are we doing here? You know, to quote all time great Taylor Twellman.
I totally get that argument. In any case, like with those players and with these short-term loan call-ups, I've also like, this is a thing. I don't even know if we should talk about it anymore, but people being upset that someone gets a short-term loan call-up and then doesn't play on the first team.
I would be more upset if any of these short-term loan call-ups did play, because that would mean to me that we are getting destroyed, right? Like these are guys that you put in at this point in their development because we can't risk injury to players who are more valuable week in, week out. And the only times that you would do that are we're getting crushed or we're crushing someone, and where we've got 8 shots on target all year, we're not crushing anybody right now.
I think a lot of the people who are upset about it think that like these players are the answer somehow.
And we're talking about the US Open Cup later on, right?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll cover that.
All that to be said, like, I don't know that any of that part matters that much as far as like on-field results, but it would be a lot of fun to see Michael Burton on the bench for the first team.
Yeah. That said, we did get a lineup with first team players on it.
Yeah, and I felt pretty good about this lineup.
Yeah, I looked at this lineup and I was like, yeah, this A makes sense. And B, I was glad that we didn't just play Ragone because he's expensive. I thought he didn't deserve, based on his output in the last match, that he did not deserve the start. And so seeing a front line of O'Brien, Rubio, and Finley kind of made me feel like there's still consequences for performance for some people.
Yeah, that, and then also not trying to be too cute in the spots right. people are missing. Jean is hurt. Play the left back at left back. Let yep. Peter start again. Cascante's gone. Play the center back at center back. Hindsight goes in. We didn't always have that luxury last year, but we do now. And so take advantage of it. And I was glad to see that as well. I was excited to see what Rubio and Drewski would look like together. We didn't really get to see much of that just because of the lack of service getting into that part of the field where they even got the opportunity to work off of each other. But I was happy to see that in the lineup at least. Jeremiah is missing the show because he has a work event, but he did send us his notes from the show. And so we'll just read through those pretty quickly. It's just a bullet point. Yeah. It's 11 straight winless match dating back to last October.
That O'Brien miss in context.
What's the context there?
I think the context must be the fact that he was pretty much wide open. We haven't scored in forever. We haven't had shots on target. Like, this is the one, you know? Like, this is about as, like, what else can we do here?
I was watching this game with friends, and I let out a sarcastic wolf out after O'Brien missed that shot. And then as the game went on, I was like, this joke does not land as well the rest of this game. to continue with Jeremiah's notes, Biru clearance. That was amazing. Spectacular.
Oh, so good.
This one comes from a corner. Brad Stuver, I kind of think if this one goes in, it might get called back for a foul because Luis Muriel was being fairly physical with Brad Stuver and didn't allow him to move across the line to go and challenge that. But Biru is on that backside, sticks his leg out directly behind him as the ball is. Do you think that was going in? They showed an angle from behind the goal really quickly. I think at the very worst, it was hitting the post and was inside that post.
I think our best hope is that it hit the post. If not, nestling into the side netting there. That was... I love Guilherme Biru for stuff like that. I think the bravery of doing a scorpion kick clearance on the goal line like that is something you only get from a player like him. I think that's so sweet.
Yeah. The man will try things. This is a thing we've learned in the short time we've had him. Defensively, I don't know that I saw a ton to make me think one thing or another. Thor Halsen was a menace up that right side, but I don't think it was necessarily his fault. Like,
That guy's a really good player.
He's good. And the way Orlando was playing, they were defending in a back four, but as they went into the attack, kind of like what we did a lot with Gallagher last year, Thor Halsen would essentially end up as a winger as they got into the, like, their finishing shape in the final third. And Santos, the left back, would become more of like a third center back and stay deep. And so oftentimes in Austin's kind of defensive rotation, if it's like a wing back going up like that, it's the winger's responsibility to cover them. But I think, again, this is mostly team defending or a lack thereof that led to a lot of Thor Halsen's chances up that side. But I feel like Biru showed some more flashes of something that could be good one day and showed fewer flashes of something that might be disastrous most of the time, like he did last week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he was a little bit less risky of a play in his second time out with the team. So if, like, he continues to grow, this is only good news for us. That said, I am glad that you kind of mentioned some team lapses in defense here. There were also some individual lapses of defense, absolutely, as Jeremiah's most second note here says, Gallagher asleep on goal. That's the whole note, folks. And yeah, I don't know.
This comes from open play, right? Mm-hmm. Which is even crazier. And like, on my rewatch, it was even worse than I remembered it live, because this is a thing like on set pieces. Austin has been burned by this kind of ball before, where the fullback, it's maybe like the box is maybe a little bit overloaded and they think the ball is going to land further forward. And so they kind of step in to help double team someone there. And the ball either gets flicked on or goes farther than they thought, and they leave someone completely unmarked on the backside. In this one, they get the ball really far down on the inline, and Jack Lynn is kind of the only person anywhere close to John Gallagher. And mm-hmm. as he drifts behind him, talking about object permanence, as Lynn drifts behind Gallagher, he kind of just seems to forget that he's there. And when he turns his head and sees Lynn there to finish that header, he almost acts surprised that there was someone on that half of the pitch.
My read on this was that Gallagher thought he was line tight. And so if there's anyone behind him, they're offside. And so that was my entire read on this, because even in the moment, I thought Jack Lynn was offside until I saw that he was being played on by, was it Finley marking the cross?
Someone on the other side of the field?
Yes.
Okay.
And so like Gallagher is in line with both center backs on that back line. Perfect. And so I wonder if this is a situation where, because our dudes are big and tall, they've blocked out little Ethan Finley far away. And so, you know, like as a player, you just assume that like, oh, if I'm in line with my center backs, no one's playing him onside. I'm certainly not.
Yeah, I get that. I still think he was thinking that, I think he should have been closer still to yes. be able to like make a play as the ball came in.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And, you know, I want to show a little bit of love to a guy who has been getting a tough go of it lately.
Going back to like before this goal, I thought the first like 20, 30 minutes from Austin were decent. We were moving the ball fairly well. Orlando was kind of set up in kind of like a mid block. They weren't pressing super high, but weren't entirely bunkering like they were after that second goal. And so Austin was getting up past midfield fairly regularly. They were trying some stuff, got a couple of opportunities, including that Obreon chance that we mentioned. After the first goal, it starts to change a little bit. And then once they get to that second goal that's 64th minute, and this is a free kick, just a really well-taken free kick from Nicol Odero. Like after that, it was done. There was no chance after that.
On that free kick goal, I saw a lot of people asking, like, why was Brad Stuber so furious?
Several Austin players were. Do you know what the deal was?
So my read on that is because the Orlando City set piece structure for that had the center back Janssen and someone else behind Austin's wall. So they were in an offside position and they were blocking Brad Stuver's vision to be able to see the ball for the free kick. And so Brad was trying to say that these players were offside and obstructing the play because he wasn't able to see the ball.
I feel like that's a stretch, like if that's the argument, because if Lodero had played it like between a gap and like,
I mean, he kicks it right over where those two players are standing,
but he kicked it over the wall.
He kicked it around the wall,
but
the announcers say he went around the wall on it. And like when you watch the replay, it's right between where those two players were standing.
I'm being harsh. I didn't think he was stopping it regardless of how quickly he saw it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I, I have taken one penalty kick in my life, and it was terrifying. So I am not the expert here, but that did seem to be what Brad was so animated about. Whether he was right or wrong,
yeah,
that's not me. Crazy thing is, it's not the refs either. But you know, that's the world that we're living in right now. Is
any other player notes before we wrap up on this one?
Yeah, I had a couple. Johan Valencia had like three pretty good games before this one. Was he kind of just due?
I mean, I don't think he was set up to succeed in this game because Alex Ring was playing the deeper role, kind of like dropping in and being the one to build up in possession. Either by instruction or by instinct or by lack of confidence, Valencia is not one to like go and try to get the ball and try to build it up himself. And so I feel like he just kind of got caught in no man's land often.
Oh, and I was even just talking about the defensive side of the ball.
Just defensive.
Because, yeah. I mean, he was late on a lot of challenges. He wasn't as touch tight as he has been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that is Nicol Otero, and just like we're talking about this Orlando team missing a lot of players. If you look at the 11 they actually put on the field, it is an above average MLS squad. They still had two DPs on the field. They had Nicol Otero as one of those guys. Thorhalsson has been a very exciting player this year, even though they have struggled a little bit. And so I think like we're talking about like a rotated squad as an opportunity for Austin, but I still think this is an above average MLS 11, and it takes far less than that to beat Austin these days.
Yeah. And then my other player note was a positive one, actually. Diego Rubio fighting for and winning a lot of balls that we have simply never seen our forwards fight for nor win, because we've never had anyone with any kind of pace up there. Like that small bit of maybe we've signed a 30-year-old striker who isn't toast feels pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's where I'm at.
If we can ever get the man service, I think he'll be a good player.
Yeah.
The way that we're playing now, I don't know that the stats will ever bear that out, but I think he is good. And with the right pieces around him or the right game around him, that Rubio would be a really good MLS player still. I'll say one thing about Alex Ring. We already kind of bashed on his long balls earlier, but he's not that good at progressing the ball necessarily. He does okay just kind of managing the buildup and kind of playing balls out, but those long diagonals, he hit several of them straight into a center back. And then defensively, we saw this last year as well. Like he still has okay straight line speed, like that recovery speed to get into a position and kind of railroad an attacker into a certain position until he can get help. But when he's 1v1, he is not good. He got skinned by Luis Muriel a couple of times last night. And like Muriel is very good. He's a really good player, but the guy playing defensive midfield, you'd hope that he could put up at least a little bit of an effort in those moments. And Alex Ring can't do it.
Yeah. I really love Alex Ring. And this is really hard to like come face to face with like players aging out of their like peaks. Right. Because Austin is such a young club, we haven't had to watch someone be top at what they do and then become not that yet. And I think we might be experiencing that for the first time with Alex. And it is my hope that we can get him some support so he can do that a little bit more gracefully.
Yeah. Not so long ago, I have a terrible memory, but thinking back to 2021, also a really bad season, but our like kind of like 2022, it was almost like we didn't talk about Drewsi very much in a lot of the games because it was like, it was just a given that, yeah, he was good again.
Yeah.
And in 2021, it was almost like Alex Ring was almost the only good thing in this game.
There was an article that Chris Bills wrote for The Striker that basically was like, Alex Ring is our best player at four different positions,
yeah,
but he can only play one at a time.
Yeah, not true anymore. I don't know that he's our best player at any position anymore, sadly. All right, let's take another quick break. We have actually quite a bit of news to cover, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about Austin FC 2 in the U.S. Open Cup. We're going to talk about other pieces of news, including international call-ups, and then we're going to be joined by Gio Savarese to preview the FC Dallas game. Hang tight. We'll be right back with more of that.
Our premier sponsor is McGuire Woods Consulting, helping clients in the public affairs space, from lobbying at the local, statewide, and federal levels to digital and communications campaigns across the country.
McGuire Woods Consulting has offices in 10 MLS cities, but only advertises on this podcast because it's the home of the two-time reigning Copa Chaos champions. Hopefully we can keep that streak going. Contact our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com for more information.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. This team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience. Our friends at Sage Wilson Realty are giving away two tickets to an upcoming match. Fill out the form in the show notes for your chance to win.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back. Before we get into our FC Dallas preview with Gio Savarese, Mike, let's talk about the U.S. Open Cup. So Austin FC 2 lost to 4-0 SC, a semi-pro team from Dallas, in penalties after a last minute equalizer. I kind of tasked you with putting together the notes for this. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, I think we don't have to go too deep into the way that this game kind of played out. I think the important thing to remember is that our friend Colin is to blame for this because 30 seconds before the game, no, sorry, 1 minute before the game ended, Colin said, "Hey, it's pretty cool to see the first club win of 2024. And then 30 seconds later, 4-0 tied. And then we went into extra time where they held on being a man down. And yeah. Thanks, Colin. I will say that we should have probably won this game. What, 4 or 5 goals?
Yeah, I mean, like we had, I want to say, like, Micah Burton misses a chance from about 6 or 7 yards early on. Jonathan Santillan has at least 2 chances, maybe 3, that he misses. Brian Arellano has a chance from about 10 yards with an open goal. And the only defender standing in goal, he hits him in the head with the shot. And so I don't know if XG is tracked for MLS or Open Cup games, but I would guess ours would have had to be like pushing 3, if not above 3, right?
Yeah, it was a tough match. You know, we won the possession battle. We were super accurate in passes. We had a lot of shots. The team had 16 shots, you know, 4 on target. Almost 60% possession, 85% pass accuracy, like everything you could ask the team to do except put the ball in the net, they did. And they just, for whatever reason, snake bit at the very last part of this game, you know, and the most important part. But here we were.
Yeah, I really chalk this one up to age and inexperience. Austin started 7 teenagers in this game, I think ended the game with 8 teenagers on the field. 4OSC is a semi-pro team, but I was listening to the Third Degree podcast out of Dallas just to kind of get some intel on FC Dallas. And they were talking about 4O because 4O is from Dallas. And they're like, I know some of these players. These are like former FC Dallas Academy kids. These are professional indoor soccer players. These are guys who, like one of the guys who made the penalty, they're talking about him. He's like, this guy was supposed to be like the next big thing and like scored against Real Madrid at GA Cup 1 year and just had so many injuries that this is where his career took him. And so I think knowing what I know about this team now, I don't find this loss embarrassing necessarily to say 17s and like missing several starters, right? Let's see, Touré, Bobo, probably Bonachero whenever he comes back. And then Antonio Gomez was out playing a teenager at center back. So four or five starters not available for this team, and you have 7 teenagers starting. I think in that context, it's still disappointing, but I don't think it's necessarily embarrassing like a lot of people will frame the MLS Cup thing, like saying, yeah, oh, the MLS team should win. When in this context, I don't know if that's necessarily, they're like huge favorites here.
Yeah, I think the only embarrassing thing about it is that the league decided to put next pro teams in instead of MLS first teams.
Yeah.
Which could have been done by just relaxing MLS rules. But here we are, you know. Overall, as a, you know, as a note, the MLS decision to play next pro teams in the Open Cup is looking like a mixed bag. You know, in this first round, we saw 7 wins, but 4 losses. And these are all against fourth division teams, third and fourth division teams or lower in the U.S. soccer pyramid. And so, yeah.
Now you have to think next round, there's not going to be many of these teams who are favored, right? They'll start running
right
in ESL competition, better teams from their levels are higher. So I don't expect a ton of these teams to make it super far.
Yeah, I would be surprised if we have any next pro teams in round 3, which is when the MLS teams will start to come into the tournament. One thing that I took away as a highlight was Ervin Torres. I thought he looked phenomenal on the ball. He was so fun to watch off the ball, like actually making rotational movements that make the system work. Really cool to see.
Yeah, y'all know I love Ervin Torres, and I was eager to see him get some minutes and to see him still just 16 stepping into this game and looking like he 100% belongs. That was very encouraging to me. I thought Micah Burton looked good for most of the game. He seems to be kind of taking on more of a role in this team and not just being one of the guys, but like being one of the guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was also Mason Miller stepping into center back next to Sal Mazzaferro. This kid, he joined the U17 Academy team, I think just last year, maybe a little bit before that. So I had not seen him as much as some of the guys who had been there longer than him. I did see him play for the U17 team, partnered with Gavin Wolf, Josh's youngest son, Owen's younger brother. And to see him step in, I thought his age and inexperience showed a little bit during this game. But overall, I thought he acquitted himself fairly well. And then
Physically, I think Mason looks at least as big as Sal. And he's got what? Sal's got 5 years on this kid. So, yeah who knows? I know... Personally, I hit a like insane growth spurt between 16 and 18. I grew 6 inches in the summer once. And so like what he looks like at the end of the year could be totally different than what he looks like now.
I thought Anthony DeAnda as well, a kid who he's been in the academy setup for, I don't know, 3 years or something now, has always been like high flying, offense first fullback, gets a few red cards every season, a little firework in all senses of the word. I thought he showed a lot of like maturity in his game in this game, where he is being a little bit more defense first when it's called for. Not like I never saw him lose his head or like get into like a scuffle or anything like that. So I was really
encouraged. And he got beat up
as well. Like, yeah, he did.
He took a lot of hits and like kept it composed. And I was really impressed with that.
Yeah. So in a team where there are two fullbacks who I'm guessing are planning to be the starters that are not in the team right now, that for Anthony to come out and show like, hey, no, don't forget about me. I'm still here too. Yeah. I thought that was good.
Speaking of don't forget about me, I'm still here. A lot of fans took the opportunity toward the end of the Open Cup match to express their frustration with the state of the first team, given that the president, Andy Loughnane, Anthony Precourt, who owns the team, and sporting director Rodolfo Burrell were all in attendance. There was a pretty audible and clear wolf out chant that started during this kind of interim period, either before extra time or before PKs. I think this kind of undercurrent of frustration is really growing across the like all levels of fandom now, you know. And I know we talk about it with Gio in a little bit. Where are you at the moment, Landon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's changed much for me in that. I guess I don't expect Josh Wolf to be the coach long term, regardless of what Rodolfo Burrell says. I kind of think he's just buying his time until he gets his team in place, and then they knock one more year off of Wolf's contract, so the buyout is smaller, and that makes Precourt happy. That's my fan fiction theory as to what is actually going on behind the scenes, is that Burrell took the job and said, I want to be able to fire the coach, and Precourt said, not this year. Next year you can. I also don't think that firing a coach necessarily solves much, but I think you get to a certain point where, like, if it's the same old, nothing's changing, nothing's improving, that like a last grasp at a straw to do something different, to change something, I don't know if results continue the way that they're going, that you can justify keeping Josh Wolf.
Yeah. I thought Phil West had an incredibly like both pointed and softball question after the Orlando City match, which of course happened after this Open Cup match, where Phil used three adjectives to describe the team's performance in Orlando, none of them good, and then said, you know, I've seen other coaches in the league own losses like this. And watching Josh Wolf reject the premise, I think, to me, was the biggest surprise in us not waking up to seeing a quick, we thank Josh Wolf for growing the legend here, kind of message on Austin FC social media, because everything we've seen from Rodolfo Burrell so far has shown that like, that's not the mentality that he has.
Yeah.
And to pull it back to the Open Cup, watching Anthony Precourt look like he was living and dying on every penalty kick, really seems like he's at a point where he is like very interested in getting some wins and changing some culture. And so, yeah, I don't know. Those two things combined led me to think that like this was the time to make that change.
I think it, you mentioned Burrell. I think like he has been very open in saying, like, I would fire most of the players right now if I could. Like, he's all yeah. but said that, right? It's like, yeah. every one of you is for sale. I'm going to replace every one of you as soon as I get a chance, like in kinder words in most senses, but that's what he's saying.
I mean, not really kinder words. He said
more diplomatic words.
Like, he said, we can't sell players that no one wants. Like, that's worse. That's worse than I'd like to get rid of you. That's yeah. I am stuck with you.
I can't get rid of you. Like, all that to say, it, having already said that, I think it's really difficult to justify, like, saying like, okay, everything's terrible, we need a complete refresh, I would get rid of all the players, but I can't right now. But then the coach is a different story and saying, oh, well, he's fine, we're gonna just see things out. Like, again, I don't think it's all Joshua's fault. I don't think a new coach makes this team any or much better, but if you're going to say, like, preach this, like, accountability or like change is coming, we need to do things differently, and then have this kind of results for this long and this, like, not even like any hope in this last one, there's almost nothing good happened. Like, it's hard to balance those two things and say, like, I'm going to hold the players accountable as soon as I'm able, but not with the coach.
Yeah.
Like, the results are terrible, and that's that. Like, most coaches don't survive this.
That said, you know, we do have a couple of lights in this tunnel coming up, right? With Julio and Danny coming back from their national team performances.
We were really good when they were playing for us earlier this year.
You know, Landon, I'm trying, man. Like, no, I do think that, you know, with Driussi back, there's a chance that we see Danny where he belongs in this team, right? Maybe not quite as high up on the field as he has been in the beginning of the year, which, if we've got something connecting our back line to our attacking band, like, maybe that does help.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If we're going to try to glean any optimism here, like, Julio, who is a better distributor than most on the back line, Danny, who can progress.
Julio's a better distributor than most in our midfield right now.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Let's be real. Like,
Julio at the six, baby. Let's Danny,
let's
can
go three at the back.
Progress
come
the
on.
Ball better than anyone else. Maybe that's enough to get the ball close enough to the players who we do think are two actually talented attacking players in Driussi and Rubio. If we can get them the ball, then I think it could give us a chance. But hopefully Danny and Julio can help that happen.
If not, Brad Stuber can just keep throwing it.
That's right. Let's give up as many corners as we can just so we can see Brad throw the ball. Okay, a couple other pieces of news quickly before we move on to Gio Savarese. Kopitehas details came out a couple weeks ago. We have our first Kopitehas match coming up. The way that they're doing it this year is different than it was last year, in that every game counts, and then they'll take points per game at the back end and declare the winner that way. I still don't think it's a great way to do it, but I think it's better than the way they did it last year. Do you think that's right or fair?
No. I love the way we did it last year because we won. And I don't know that we have as good a chance of winning it this year because of the way that they're doing it, right? Dallas has a little bit of advantage because 60% of their games are home games. We at least have an even split of home and away games. And Houston will have 40% of their games be home matches. And so there's definitely an element of unfairness in this. Also, Houston and Dallas get to play us,
right?
But we don't get to play us.
Yeah, how fair is that?
Yeah. So, you know, how could this possibly be fair if we don't win? If we do win, perfect.
Most important tournament in the world.
Amen.
Quick update on the referee lockout as well. So today as we're recording, which is Monday, PSRA is voting on a new tentative agreement. Voting closes at midnight. I'm assuming midnight East Coast, but we'll probably have news on Tuesday as this show comes out, whether or not the lockout's over or if it's going to keep going.
Yeah. As a reminder, the last tentative agreement was rejected by 95% of the PSRA membership. So,
so things would have had to change drastically for this.
Right. And, you know, there was a post, there was another post-match quote from Josh Wolf after the Orlando match where he said, the refs are the refs. We can't complain about it. But we can complain about it. We're allowed.
I think that's a fine thing for the coach. Did you see Peter Vermes like yelling at a guy in a press conference?
No.
He like this reporter was like trying to get him to say something bad about the refs. And Vermes was like, I mean, sure, but the refs were bad last year too. We can't control that. So I'm not going to talk about
it. Oh, yes.
So I think that's a fair thing for a coach to say, but you're right. We can complain about it. Fans can complain about it. And I think it's getting to a point where we are and should continue to complain about it.
Yeah. I actually liked Josh's answer here a lot better than I liked that Vermes quote, because like Josh has complained about the refs a lot in the past. And so by not complaining about them now and saying he can't complain about them now, I think he's letting on a little bit more than maybe he would want to us. If we kind of read between the lines a little bit, do some, you know, some projection of our own hopes, but you know, all that to say, pay the refs.
All right, let's move on to our FC Dallas preview with Gio Savarese. Very excited to talk to Gio Savarese. He's a guy who, I mean, as a like just as a communicator, I think he's excellent. Just press conferences, interviews on Extra Time and other places, always really interesting to listen to. Today is not an exception. I'll say also very, very friendly and kind, because as you'll hear in the intro in a moment, I had a Sofa Score Fop Mob or something up, and an ad randomly started playing as I'm introducing him. He took it like water off a duck's back and just was very kind about it. So I left it in just to show how nice he is. But hang tight. We'll be right back with that. All right. We are thrilled to be joined by Gio Savarese. You'll know him as a coach, maybe a player. He's currently studio analyst on MLS 360 in Espanol.
Exciting.
And
it's going to bring about change every day.
Well, sorry, there's music playing somewhere on my computer. Why is this happening?
Landon's watching some YouTube here while...
It's an ad that just randomly started playing.
Gio Savarese is a legend, and this is how you're doing this, Landon? Gosh.
Okay, I'm gonna read. I love it. This is the best thing, where it's organic, you know, when things happen and we manage it. That's it. That's the best way.
Okay, well, I'm just going to leave that in then, because we're going to make lemonade here. But Gio, we're very pleased to have you here. What has it been like switching from the sideline to the studio? I know as a fan, you're a coach who I always really enjoyed listening to your insight on interviews and press conferences. You're a guy who's willing to speak your mind a little bit and kind of give a thoughtful answer. So has that transition into the studio been fairly natural for you?
Yeah, first of all, you know, the career of being a coach for me is a passion. I love it. In this particular moment, and it's something that I've done, I had the chance to be able to, you know, join the great group that we have with Apple TV. And it's something that I've done as well for many years with ESPN. I worked for 11 years. So when they asked me to join them, for me, I saw it as a great opportunity to continue to give an insight to the fans, to the people that are watching MLS from a coach's perspective, someone that has been there in so many ways as a player, as a coach, as a commentator, and try to, you know, and give more information, insight, giving the fans, you know, more information about what is going on inside as a coach. So I think for me, it's been great to be part of this team, and I'm very happy to join Apple TV.
Well, I think we might want to ask you some more questions about coaching here in a little bit. But first, let's talk about FC Dallas. So just looking at their 2023 results, they finished seventh in the West, lost to Seattle in the first round of the playoffs. In 2024 so far, they won their first game against San Jose, but then have lost three in a row since then. They had a bye last week, and I think only one player away on international duty. So they should be fresh coming in against Austin FC. But they're missing quite a few key players. Alan Velasco was out with an ACL tear last year. Asier Iaramendi, it seems like he may not be back this week, but not sure about him. Paxton Pomacall seems like he might not be back anytime soon.
Marco Farfan hasn't played a single minute yet this year. He was a big contributor for them last year. And then they've lost a lot of players as well. Edwin Cerrillo over to the Galaxy. Facundo Quiñon went back to Argentina. Jader Obrion, of course, ended up here with us. And then Jesus Jimenez ended up in Greece. Kind of, I guess, the big signing that they have had is Peter Musa, right, coming in. How does that work from a, like, you start off a season kind of with a hard beginning, right? But then you get that break. Is this an opportunity for FC Dallas to kind of refresh and come back a little bit more focused, maybe?
Yeah, I think first of all, credit to Nico Esteves. I think he's a coach that has tried to get the best of Dallas. He has a style of play, you know, possession oriented, and he's been trying to find the right way of playing with the group that he has. I think the unfortunate thing is what you said, you know, the amount of injuries of important players that he has had, and that has pushed him to sometimes, you know, lose consistency in the way he wants to play. And I believe that, you know, because of the reason, it has become more difficult for him to be able to, create a situation in which, you know, can be a little more steady game after game. So I think it's a situation in which, you know, they need to evaluate. As you say, you know, the new signings, Musa, for example, is a very important signing because he's a type of player that they haven't had in the past. But he also, Musa needs, you know, the players around him to be able to support him. And hopefully, you know, he can get his full team together soon in order to be more competitive. But I think, you know, as well that sometimes when you have these breaks, as you were mentioning, you know, it's you're not sure how the players are going to come back. You do your best to try to push them to make sure that they train well, that they understand the opportunity that they have, you know, to be fresh. But sometimes can go the other way. So, you know, Nico has, you know, a job to do to make sure that the guys get as ready as possible for this important match.
One of their most important players for the last several years at this point is Jesus Ferreira. And this year, it seems like, and it's probably going to take some time for him and Musa to kind of get on the same page, but I saw some quotes from Nico Esteves being a little bit critical of Ferreira, saying that he wanted him to stay more forward, to stay up in the box, to play off of Musa, and that he was kind of freelancing a little bit and moving around the field and trying to take over the game on his own. How do you think he gets the most out of a player like Ferreira?
I think it's part of this, what I mentioned before, trying to understand how to get the best of the team. And now with Musa on top, you know, Ferreira being part of the attack, you know, now both players on top need to make sure that they understand exactly how to complement each other. We know Ferreira is always a player. He's been always a player. Even when he was the lone striker, he will come back. He will look for spaces deep. He, you know, will come back to try to find the ball. And then from those movements, he will have a space to attack and find good options to score goals. Now with another player on top, maybe right now it's all about, you know, trying to get, you know, the best of them to understand a little more each other. Maybe when Ferreira comes a little bit down, that Musa can create some space for him to be able to come back and get into spaces forward. So I think it's just trying to make sure that both of them can understand how to complement each other. And I think right now they're still on that phase of understanding, you know, one or the other, what is the best situation to be able to be more dangerous.
I wanted to go back for a minute to something that you had raised a little bit earlier about how sometimes, you know, after an international break, the players can come back and maybe not be as fresh and as ready. What's something that the fans might not understand about information coaches have around fitness and game readiness?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to do a very good job in those 2 weeks to prepare the team to arrive to the match with maximum capacity, to make sure that the players mentally and physically are ready to be able to give, you know, what the team needs. And then those players that join national teams, that they can come back and perform, you know, in the right way. Understand also what were the loads, how many players, you know, how many games they played. So you need to make sure that you get that information to put the best team on the field. But I think, you know, for the fans as well, I think, you know, that the understanding of, like, sometimes, you know, some of the players that maybe went to the national team that they need to play less minutes, they need to understand that it's an important part of these moments. But they have a role as well, because I think they have to continue to put the pressure to the players to make sure that, you know, that they understand that coming back, you know, from national team, coming back from now 2 weeks, you know, that you haven't played, that the expectation is at the highest. And it has to be from the fans' point of view to say, you know what, we expect you to play the best. And, you know, actually, we didn't see you last weekend. So, you know, now we want to make sure that you give everything that you have for the team.
So in the 9 times that Austin FC and FC Dallas have faced off against each other, Austin FC's record is 2 wins, 2 draws, and 5 losses. You've coached in a lot of rivalry games yourself. What does a rivalry game mean to a player, and like how do you get your players ready for something like that? And then also, how does it affect a player's mentality in a situation like Austin, where they've not done so hot most of the games against FC Dallas?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Usually for me, when we had our games against Seattle, those battles, you know, that those games that you knew that rivalry that we have against each other, which is, you know, now Austin against Dallas, those usually were the games that I didn't have to speak as much to the players, because I think the club, the fans, the organization, and, you know, me as a coach and my coaching staff, we make sure that they understood how important the game was. And I think after that, it's organic. It's understood. And even sometimes the players will talk to the other players, listen, this is the game that we're going to win. This is the most important game that we're going to play, because it's against a rival. If you don't create that understanding to the players, if you don't create that environment for them to understand that this is the biggest game, then the club hasn't done the right, you know, job. The fans haven't done the right job, and the players, you know, you need to push them, and it shouldn't be that way, because I think these are the games that the coaches have to talk the least, give a few tactics points, and it's all about the rivalry, and the players should know what to do in these type of games.
So right now, I think maybe this might be a good opportunity to shift over to a little bit of Austin FC content. Looking at Austin's situation, you know, we've managed 8 shots on target all season. We've yet to get our first win. We're coming back from a tough loss against Orlando. Is there anything that can fix this team right now?
So, It is an interesting situation what is happening in Austin, because I believe, you know, Josh Wolf has done a good job to implement a style of play that is very recognizable. You know, his base possession, he tries to play from the back. He's one that, you know, has pattern plays very clear to build up and try to find opportunities to move forward. For some reason, you know, this type of things that they were able to do 3 years ago are not working. They are not, finding the complete phase. Maybe at some point, you know, when they're building up, you know, they're coming out from the back, it's looking good. And then it doesn't equate to be able to create an opportunity going forward. I don't know if something has been lost with the players. I don't understand why the players don't look as competitive as they used to. or maybe, you know, sometimes the intensity of the way the team is playing is not at the level that it should be. And I believe that the club has done a great job to give confidence to a coach that has proven in the past that he's done well. But I think game by game, the team needs to win games. The team needs to now show up and not be that team that, you know, that actually on the other side, the coach or the organization say, this is the game that we need to win because it's often. So now they need to find a way to be able to be that team that is going to compete at a different level. And unfortunately, right now, they haven't done that.
But Adrian Healy, MLS commentator, former MLS commentator, tweeted the other day, just simply tweeted Josh Wolf's record with no other commentary. And looking at those numbers, I think a lot of people would say it would be fairly justifiable for him not to have his job anymore. Like, at what point is it too far gone? At what point is it beyond saving and you need to just cut ties and make it and go in a new direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're an organization that tries to support your coach, that tries to understand why things are not working, to work beyond just saying, I'm going to fire the coach and trying to see what can we do in order to make this team better with the coach that we have, I think it's always a better organization. Of course, it comes to time that when things don't work out, you know, teams need to make their decisions. But I don't know if Austin has exhausted yet every tool or every situation to try to see, you know, if maybe there's a way to bring this team back, you know, then just get rid of the coach. I've seen situations, you know, turn around in a matter of weeks. I mean, I remember a run to the playoffs in 2021 with the Portland Timbers. We didn't have a great start, and then all of a sudden we changed things. You know, we had the backing, and after the support that I got after again against Seattle that we lost at home, all of a sudden we made the final. So I think patience is good, but, you know, how much patience can you have if you don't find the solutions? If game to game, all of a sudden the team doesn't look that it's improving, then, you know, that's a decision, a tough decision that the club has to make. But I think they have to exhaust every option first to try to see how they can, you know, bring this team back again.
On a
wanted to end on a slightly lighter note. I don't think I have to ask you who your favorite Austin FC player is. Do I?
Oh, you assume that I'm going to say Drusy or Pereira?
No, Pereira, the Venezolano.
Of course, Pereira is. But Drusy is another player that you always have to, you know, put into one of your favorite players because of the quality that he has and how good of a player he's been. I don't know right now. Maybe he's not at his top level for some reason. But he continues to be, for me, one of the best players in MLS.
And talking about Danny Pereira, what do you see as his ceiling? He's a guy that here in Austin, we were really hoping over the last like year and a half would really take a huge step forward, maybe even be like being sold to Europe. And he's improved, but he hasn't taken such a big step that he's definitely going to get sold immediately. What do you think Danny Pereira's ceiling is?
I think he hasn't reached his ceiling yet. I think we have seen pieces of his quality. I think he's a player for, you know, for the position that he plays that, you know, has a lot of intensity. He's quick. He can win balls, but he can also build up and create. What I think he needs to do it more, you know, more constant. I think he needs to be a player that, you know, that can do that a little bit more, you know, consecutive. You know, he has to try to become more of a type of like player, you know, from Columbus. Nagby's been a player in the league that, you know, has been an example, Diego Chará. So these type of players, you know, that are constant, I think Pereira has to achieve that, but I think he's still young. He's still learning. He's still maturing. Now that he's been called to the national team, I think we're going to see a different quality from him. That's what we expect. And if he continues to grow, then I believe that he's definitely going to be a player that, you know, is going to give a lot to, you know, to the organization, but also could be a player that can make a jump to a different league or, you know, or a different type of situation.
And do you think he's better suited higher up the field or kind of further back in that connecting space?
I think he can play both. But I think if you, you know, if you ask me, I like him a little bit more as a number eight. You know, someone, because I believe he has the capability to be able to defend well, but also, you know, to be able to have the speed and the endurance to be able to reach, you know, the box and try to be dangerous there as well. So I think that's his probably best position from someone that sees him from, you know, from far. But, you know, I think he's a player that has the tools also to play as a deep, you know, defensive man.
All right. Well, Gio, thanks so much for taking the time. We really appreciate your insight. We'll be looking forward to seeing you on MLS 360 in Espanol. Yeah, thanks so much and have a good night.
It's a pleasure, guys. Take care and good luck this weekend.
All right. We want to thank Gio Savarese one more time. I want to thank Mike Crignola again also. Thanks for doing this, buddy. It's always a pleasure to have you and very, very nice for us to be able to call on you on short notice whenever we need to take a week off.
I like to be the super sub around here, you know? put me in, coach.
We would like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Come find us on Twitter at LVHero87, at FutureXSkeleton on all of the social medias.
Everywhere, yeah.
And then at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And then, Mike, you are going to have another Moon Tower Spotlight this week, correct?
We hope to. We have been really trying to find female creators in a lot of different spaces across MLS, and some places are a little bit spottier than others, but we really enjoy doing them, and we really enjoy the like unique perspectives that they bring. And so we're working on it. If y'all across the Austin FC sphere know of female creators that create for other teams that we're going to be playing, feel free to slide them into our inbox. Do a little intro, swoontower@gmail.com. We would love to connect with the folks that y'all want to hear from.
And if, I know that there are, anecdotally, I know there are people who only listen to Swoon Tower or people who only listen to Moon Tower. If you're not listening to Swoon Tower, you're wrong, because it's great and it's better than this show. If that's not your cup of tea, not your thing, the Swoon Tower spotlights are very Moon Tower content, right? Like,
yeah, we off air, we've had multiple conversations around like, how do we frame this so that people know it's me and Steph, but also know that it is, I mean, it is tactical previews. We were talking about 442 diamonds and academy structures and like the way that Philly plays kind of direct mid block, you know, like actual soccer content a lot.
And in a way that we often don't have time to do on this show, or like talking to the like national commentators, often like you guys talking to local folks are getting more local insight on it as well. So highly recommend listening to, like I said, Swoon Tower, because it's better than this show. But at the very least, whenever there's a Swoon Tower spotlight, listening to that segment of it.
Yeah. And so we're putting those up right up at the front of all of the shows as just kind of an easier way to get into that stuff right away. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the review of the FC Dallas match. And then we'll be previewing the... Who's the next opponent, Mike? I didn't look this far ahead.
San Jose.
And we'll be previewing the San Jose match. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
And I'm Mike Prignola.
We'll catch you next time.
Thing for nothing, you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.